Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I got a problem that is complicated. Got a few changes and I just can't ignore the signs. Hear them now, it's so loud it hurts. Hear me growl, hear me howl with the boom.
Off the throw, won't get a bounce, down it's three in the box. Bicycle kick! What a play, what a shot, and it's 1-0 Rowdies.
Hear me growl, see me run, see me jump. Try to fight, but I emerge with the poison hand. You better watch out, it's gonna take most of what you got. All eyes are on the end, the silence is death burning. Just no help against this full moon. Don't ever say I didn't warn you.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. You are listening to the Unused Substitute Show. We are your green and gold gospel and your only source for year-round Rowdies coverage. We are live on Radio St. Pete Online, part of the Beautiful Game Network, presented in part by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Joining me tonight, slightly different lineup, well, of sorts, I guess. Daniel Endonino, sir. It was a bit of a rough weekend for some of us. It turned into a better week for others of us.
Hey, Saturday was 50-50. Monday was a Monday. And we're just going to leave it at that.
For those listening who aren't fully aware, Dan, you are basically, because of connections with your father, you are very much a New York Islanders fan.
Through and through.
So after the game, we're all hanging out at the local pub, kind of watching the end of the Islanders Lightning game 4. And, the Lightning were starting a comeback there, but didn't quite come back. So we're all giving Dan a heck of a hard time, and then the Islanders end up winning it anyways. But, you know, then Monday happened. And, you know, the largest shutout playoff game in 35 years, I believe, was the number.
Quite like the Rowdies on Saturday, we're going to forget that game happened and move on to the next one because they were both ugly and gross and never need to be spoken of again.
The good news is, though, is of course the Tampa Bay Rowdies did not lose by a score of 8-0. So it's not quite as bad. Tonight, the other person joining us, if you want to say it in spirit, our Patreon executive producer tonight is Ryan Blank. Thank you, Ryan, for being a continued member of the show as on a executive producer level because of your contributions monthly to Patreon. We do appreciate that. It does help us keep the show running and going. If you want to tweet us during the show or during the week, at Unused Subs Pod is the master account. That's the one-stop shop to everything unsubs. Myself, you can reach me at @_S_Cundiff. And Daniel's is at D and Danino.
You and your underscores, man. Make everything so complicated when I want to tag you and stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, I would do @S_Cundiff or @S_Cundiff, but they're both taken. So there's not a whole lot I can do there. I mean, unless I were to go to Rowdy's Realist, which I've done before, I could bring it back. And tonight's going to be one of those episodes because Matt's not here. So this is going to be one of those episodes where I'm going to be a little real about kind of some of the things that I saw.
Because, I mean, let's bring it. There's nothing there's one positive thing I can think of from that game, and then there's like 92 minutes of crap.
Yeah. So the Tampa Bay Rowdies had a game against Charleston, and I mean they were there. I mean we were present. We were physically there. We kicked soccer balls around. You know, that's a thing that happened. In fact, we kicked soccer balls around to the tune of, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm going to double check it real quick, 632 passes.
What?
We did a lot of kicking a soccer ball around, Dan. I don't know if you noticed this, but we did a lot of kicking of the ball. It didn't really translate to anything, though.
That's what happens when you go left to right to right to left to right slowly between each player.
And mostly along the back line. It should be noted. 632 passes. We got a grand total of 11 shots total. Four of those were shots on target. And I want to point out that two of those four came in the last 10 minutes of the game.
Yep.
The Gunzotti long-range shot and the actual goal itself that Gunzotti scored later. I believe those were both in the last 10 minutes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I painfully rewatched that game last night. And yeah, two shots on goal. Now, by comparison, Charleston, 286 passes. They had 10 shots and had more shots on target than we did in a third of the production.
Lily ball, man. Lily ball. We made the mistake of letting them score early.
Well, that really wasn't early. I mean, to be fair, it was 21st minute. Not exactly early. Not exactly.
Pretty early.
I'll give the Rowdies the benefit of the doubt on how early it is. Now, it's worth pointing out that in the show last week, in the build-up, in the pregame show on Saturday, of the three of us, you were the most pessimistic about this matchup. You were the one consistently saying that it would be a draw. The rest of us, of course, were hoping for a win. But I was saying it would be a one goal game for a victory. But you were showing a draw. Matt, of course, being Matt, was like, you know, the Rowdies are gonna, you know, of course. Now can we refer to it now as pulling a New York Islanders and like beating them 8-0? Is that what we should call that from now on? Like big giant score lines? Should we just call them?
We'll talk about that after the series.
All right. Yeah.
But I think every alarm bell that has been silent, well, quietly going off in the background, reared its head Saturday. When Bob Lilley, like we talked about on the pregame show, got a goal within the first half hour and then just packed it in. And the Rowdies were devoid of answers. We had nothing. I think my pessimism for once was warranted, and I'm going to laugh at you, optimists, for once, which is a real role reversal here. But I don't know. I just that game. I had higher hopes, but in reality, I knew it wasn't going to go well, but I didn't think it was going to go like that. I thought the Rowdies had a little bit more of a creative spark in them and a little bit more energy, but that did not happen.
You know, it's funny because at the same time, I was looking at this going, this is like everything wrong that I've had with this team pretty much, like, I don't know, for a couple of years now. I mean, I don't want to take one loss and go, hey, we're awful, because believe it or not, everybody, and I want to make sure that we're reinforcing this, the Tampa Bay Rowdies have still the best record, but most points in the entire USL.
Yep.
Other results went our way. Other teams lost to teams worse than Pittsburgh. It is worth pointing out, for instance, that Phoenix lost to San Diego in a game that I think San Diego came back on, but I don't remember. In fact, it was former Rowdy Jack Blake that did a fine job leading San Diego in that match. This wasn't like we lost to Loudoun, okay? Let's be real. Let's take things, you know, all things being considered. Now, granted, Loudoun has done nothing but lose one goal games all year. It could be worse, obviously. We're not trying to be overly critical, but let's take a look at what happened this game, because, like you said, there were warning bells. There were things. There were things that I noticed watching this game again that were really frustrating. As we mentioned, if you didn't watch the game, 21st minute, of course, they get a goal. Griffin gets a ball from Cicerone, somebody that everybody knows. Everybody knows. Now, here's the thing about that. The goal itself, and it's funny because in the moment I'm really thinking of the second goal and not the first one, but the goal itself was not the most impressive thing in the world. You know, pretty run-of-the-mill type stuff. It was just, it was a bit of lackadaisical marking, and here was the breakdown that I noticed. At one moment on the freeze frame, if you're watching that, it was actually like a 4-on-3 against us. They broke with numbers. And what's interesting about that is not only did they break with numbers, but the player that ended up scoring that goal, Daniel Griffin, he actually came in from a central midfield position and essentially had Lewis Hilton beat for pace the entire length of the field. Because essentially that was Lewis's mark. Everybody else was on somebody, and Griffin became the extra player in that play going far post, which is why when the ball squirted out in that direction, he was essentially alone to bury it on Loro. Who, of course, isn't going to do a whole lot. It takes that would be a mammoth effort and an amazing save if he can manage to stop that. But, you know, unfortunately, that's a situation of they caught us on a break, which is, of course, if you've been watching the Rowdies with this three-back system, that's our weakness. The quick breaks. The quick breaks with number. There's a lot of space, a lot of opportunity there with when you've got 3-on-3 or a 2-on-3 or something like that. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the guys aren't always the best at 1-on-1 defending. They frequently get turned around a lot. Opposing players, we've seen it in these games even this year. We've seen games where, like, Forrest Lasso is, like, basically tripping over his own feet because the attacker has him falling over. Jordan Scarlett. Sometimes striker makes a couple of dribbles or a couple moves there and gets him going the wrong way, and then he's fallen over on his feet. We've seen it a bunch.
Yeah, I won't argue that. Team defends as a unit, and that's their strength. One-on-one is not the greatest.
At least that's the impression that we get. Not in the moment, but, I mean, again, we've seen it. You know, plenty of examples of it. We saw it last season. It's the same back three. We saw it last season, especially against a team like Charleston, because that was one thing that Charleston kept doing. They'd boot the ball up, and their striker would make us look silly, like just by himself. Just dribble right through everybody. The second goal. Well, let's before we jump to the second goal, one thing I want to make sure everybody's aware of, there was a lot of massive question marks at halftime. Neil Collins makes a substitution that a lot of people did not necessarily understand, in the moment especially. And that was Forrest Lasso coming out at halftime in favor of Jan Ekra. And then doing a formational shift of sorts where Jan slotted into the midfield spot and Lawrence White dropped back to play center back. This is where Dan, like, we had an advantage getting to watch the team playing in preseason, and it wasn't accessible to everybody. Connor Antley, Lawrence Weick, and for those that really don't know, Jordan Doherty, and for that matter, Max Lakowecki. As it stands right now, realistically, that's your four backup defenders behind the starting three right now.
Yep.
In several games in the preseason, Jordan Doherty was actually like the starting center back in some of those games against, like, I believe it was the Miami game. No, not Miami. What was the other one that we saw? Tormenta?
I think so.
Tormenta, I believe Jordan Doherty started as the center back. But, like, Lawrence Weick was basically a left back. He earned his spot on this team playing as a left defender.
I was going to say that was my introduction to him, was as a left back. He was a trialist, and we were talking about the kid with that kept getting stuck in and was throwing tackles all over the place.
Yep. Yeah, super, super aggressive out there on the left wing. Everybody's like, oh, my gosh, if he does that, like, how is he going to get on the roster if he's moving up the field and taking shots as a left back? But so, like, for us, when we saw that shift, that actually made a lot of sense. Because if you look at it from Neil's perspective, obviously we have five subs, but, you know, you don't want to burn a sub doing a like-for-like sub taking out Forrest for Jordan Doherty. That just doesn't make sense. It doesn't improve anything, especially if the need is a slightly more creative midfielder, a more aggressive midfielder, in which case Jan Ekra coming in is Neil's answer to that. But you still want the aggressiveness, you know, on the field. You don't want to burn a sub in the back line because you want Lawrence Weick out there on the field. So that shift at halftime made sense for those of us that saw it in preseason.
I will say also, from the get, Forrest and one of their strikers was getting into it early. And I think that yellow card sealed his fate to not get a second or anything like that.
Yeah.
But they were battling for most of that first half. And the move itself was shocking having Forrest pulled, but the logic behind it makes 100% sense to me. Moving Weick back there, or was it, or Antley? Who was it?
No, Weick dropped back.
Putting Weick back there made total sense. And like you said, for the other reasons of Jan Ekra coming in. But I think you had to watch that little game within the game of Forrest was clearly like on edge a lot, or just a little bit. The guy got in his head early, I think. And we don't see that often with Lasso. And so I think Neil made the right call sitting him at halftime so he didn't end up with the suspension.
And it's funny because the yellow card that he got was pretty silly. You know, ultimately, yep. It was away from the ball. The ball had come in over the top. There was a header. Forrest had won the header and headed it away. But the striker was still bodying up to Forrest, and Forrest didn't appreciate it. And so he gave a nice little two-handed shove to get him off of him. Now, was it a harsh yellow? You could make an argument, yes. I think it was unwarranted, personally. I thought that was a little harsh for the circumstances, considering it was pretty light shove, to be honest. It was two-handed shove, but it was fairly light, and it wasn't like the Pittsburgh player was completely innocent on that play. So I thought it was a little weird of a decision. We'll get back to the referee in a few minutes. But the interesting thing about this move is essentially the next noteworthy moment of the match comes in the 54th minute. Pittsburgh goes up 2-1. Canardo Forbes makes the assist to Russell Cicerone. Shocking, I tell you. Everybody in the USL looked at that score sheet on the box sheet and went, man, I could have put money on that and won. Because come on, guys. It's Canardo Forbes and Russell Cicerone. Those are two players that the Rowdies would kill to have right now.
Yeah.
those are two players that any team in USL would kill to have right now. They're fantastic. There's a reason they've been in this league for as long as they have. The goal, though, and here was the noteworthy thing to me, because a lot of people looked at it, and I saw some conversations about the fact that it's like, oh, well, you know, Forrest wouldn't have allowed that goal or whatever. No, I think that goal's being scored no matter what. And here's the reason why. The way that play developed, Russell Cicerone came in from essentially the left midfield spot. The striker who was basically playing in front of him shifted out to the left-hand side. That created a gap between Jordan and Lawrence that Forbes was able to pass into, that Russell was making a run into straight at their back line from the left midfield position, roughly speaking, in the moment. It was a good pass, basically like one and a half touch, two touch type thing, and, you know, puts in a neat finish around Lauro. No big deal. Here's what was noteworthy to me about that. How often have you seen Leo Fernandez make that run? Let me ask, serious question. In all of the Rowdies games that we have watched, and again, like, you obviously didn't watch most of last season, but like, so I'm kind of talking to myself, so I kind of feel weird right now. But how many times can you honestly say that you've seen Leo Fernandez make a run to the middle of the field where Sebastian Gonzatti or Juan Tejada make a run towards the outside corner to peel away a defender, and Leo Fernandez runs basically straight into the middle of the field looking for a through ball right through their defense, right through the middle of their defense? How many times have you ever seen Leo make that kind of run?
Off the top of my head, I don't think any. I can't recall more than maybe once. But I don't even think I can recall that one time. And I think that's been my issue with the offense, is we don't make those runs.
Yeah, I mean, let's be fair to Lawrence. Again, we're not trying to pick on Leo or anything.
No.
We've seen him dribble into that space. He did a great job of that. The second shot on goal that the Rowdies had in this game was Leo Fernandez dribbling into the middle of the box and making an outside of the foot shot towards the far post. Actually, it was a really, really solid effort. We really needed a lot more of that kind of creativity. So I'm not trying to slam on Leo. He was one of the only people to get a shot on goal the whole freaking game. But, you know, that type of run inherently is something the Rowdies just don't do.
Nope. And it's one of my biggest pet peeves.
And that was what stood out to me about that second Pittsburgh goal. I think for me, that was the big thing that stood out to me on that. Now, the Rowdies make several more substitutions trying to spur some creativity here. We bring on Sebastian Dalgard. We take out Connor Antley. I don't know if that necessarily improved anything anywhere. To me, those are fairly similar players at times. I think Antley has a bit more pace than Dalgard has. But I think overall, in terms of ball skills and things like that, they're pretty similar. You have a couple of more substitutions later. Leo Fernandez comes out in the 71st minute, along with Zach Steinberger. And at that moment, we do some interesting formational shifts, because Max Lekuecki comes in and Deion Harris comes in. So Deion Harris now playing basically as like a right mid, but at times, I think at one point he ended up switching to the... No, I think he started as a left mid, and then he eventually shifted over to the right-hand side. Max Lekuecki was out there on the left side at one point. It was kind of a weird jumble of players, because the play ended up, they subbed on, I think, on a corner kick, and the way that they came out of the corner kick was a little bizarre. But eventually, Deion Harris made it on the right-hand side because...
We finally switched the point of attack quickly.
Well, more importantly, we decided to make a deep, long ball to a really fast guy making a run down the end line, who, instead of trying to cross the ball super early, like Connor Antley, or, you know, deciding to peel the ball back and playing it back to a defender, decides to take the defender on, run to the end line, decides to take a second defender on and run, keep going towards the goal, and then lays it off to a wide-open Sebastian Gonzatti, who, of course, is wisely staying off the goalkeeper and off that back line to make sure that he's got an avenue for a shot. The unfortunate problem is that it happened in the 90 plus two. I and then, of course, in that stoppage time, there was three more minutes. Dejon Harris then gets another really solid chance, and almost, he actually gets a solid shot off. It doesn't go on target, but he almost gets either a goal or an assist, because I believe Max was sliding on that far post trying to tap that in on a pretty big bullet of a cross slash shot. It was close enough to be either, to be honest. Which would have been epic, by the way. If we had come back and scored two goals in stoppage time to tie that at two with two substitutes, that would have been ridiculous. It kind of is a shame that didn't happen, but thoroughly it would have been undeserved. But that would have been pretty epic if it did happen.
Part of me is a little glad it didn't. Because there was too many, like I said, like I've been saying, there's too many things that have been getting papered over because we keep winning and coming and being and having these gritty performances. And I think if we came back to tie that, I think we I shouldn't say that, because like the coaching staff, I doubt we'd paper over it. I don't think the coaching staff is doing any of that. Let me make that clear, that I don't think Neil is just like chilling on his resting on his laurels right now. I'm sure with some of these performances, he hasn't been happy. But as fans, we gloss over it, and we're just like, okay, it's cool, whatever. Nobody checks that, an ugly win or an ugly draw doesn't count. You know, they count the same on the score sheet or whatever. But we were letting things slide because, in my opinion, because of those victories and the points. And in a game like that, if we would have scored two in the last, 4 minutes of stoppage time, I think things get papered over, because we're like, hell yeah, we came back. And we shouldn't have been in that position in the first place, and it shouldn't have taken 90 minutes to get back to level.
Yeah, and so let's break this down. I think you and me are both in a consensus that the issue with this game this past week was the Jordan Scarlett to Lawrence Wyke to Lewis Hilton to Aaron Guillen connection. Basically, if I counted this right, I believe those four guys essentially contributed to, I think it's like almost half of all the passing in the game was just between those four guys.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it doesn't do much. Like a team like that's coached by Bob Lilley is not going to just like break shape because we went left to right to left over and over. You're not going to find that hole if our midfield and our strikers aren't creating those holes. They weren't creating any lanes. I'm pretty sure you can pull the tape from so many podcasts that you've done, I've done, where we're going left to right, and the forwards and midfield, everybody's got their back to goal and nobody's moving, except we're shifting from side to side. And it was just another one of those matches. And this, for some reason, transcends Rowdy's coaches. It transcends errors in this team. And it's the same thing. And for the most part, like, it doesn't really happen under Neil. Usually there's a lot better movement, but for whatever reason, Saturday, the creativity and the movement just wasn't there. I don't know whether they're tired, what's going on in their heads this past week, but it just wasn't there.
I'm going to pick on a player. I've mentioned him several times this season so far. Sometimes I'm getting some pushback because it's like, well, it's the system. Okay, I get it. But what if the system is wrong or he doesn't fit the system as well as others could or should or whatever? And I'm not even saying, and let me be forthright on this. I'm not saying that a replacement is on the bench that can perform better than this player. But I'm going to critique his performance a little bit here. Okay. Zach Steinberger, our attacking number 10. Now, granted, we're playing against a team that's kind of bunkering, playing two defensive midfielders themselves. Okay, he's got a crowded middle of the pitch. I'm not taking away anything from the difficulty of this, but it's also like legitimately one of the hardest places to play on the field in general because of that. So the expectation is there that it's going to be a difficult place to play in. If you're going to play in that role, you've got to find ways to overcome that. center circle to the box, okay, which is essentially about the width of the 6-yard box, okay, that center stretch of the field. You know how many times he touched the ball all game in that center stretch of the field? 5 times.
Now, is that, again, this is where the system more than his fault. Like, if he, there was, I mean, Pittsburgh clogged the middle of the pitch. Like, there was no room there. We didn't do anything to, like, stretch him out to create that room, but there was no room for him to receive the ball there. I'm going to defend him slightly there. They were, I think, yes, if your attacking mid is not touching the ball in the center of the pitch, then he's useless. Not saying Zach's useless, but in that game, you need to figure something else out.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is that the problem is that in stretches of that match, if not pretty much the whole match, I'm looking at him and I'm saying, like, the ball goes up to Leo Fernandez. Leo Fernandez takes it towards the end line. He's, you know, right around the corner of the 18 box. And there's nobody in the middle of the pitch to pass it to. You know, Lewis Hilton's following up on the play. You know, Lawrence Weick on the other side. Maybe sometimes Lewis and Lawrence switch sides. And Lawrence is kind of trailing on the play. But there's nobody in an aggressive position at the top of the box. In fact, where is Zach in those moments? Because Gonzotti's feeding in, you know, looking for a short pass from Leo. Adebayo Smith is basically on the back line, you know, just basically sitting on the back line looking for a cross to run in on. Zach is actually, you know, basically making a far post run. And there's literally nobody there. Over and over and over again, he's nowhere to be found on the pitch in an offensive position. Nowhere. You can't find him. I'm literally looking around the pitch. First half, second half, doesn't matter. And here's the issue. That's happened numerous times.
I don't argue that.
Where my confusion is, like, I don't even know his role. Like, I don't understand the strategy of what he's trying to do. Because, I mean, if you think about it, when the Rowdies were successful, you know, early in the season with Dos Santos, what were we doing for those plays? We were just hitting the ball up over the top and Dos Santos was getting it. Why? We didn't need Zach. We were hitting the ball up and over him every single time. We weren't even going through him for most of the game.
Yep.
Because that was criticisms I was making weeks ago, was the fact that Zach Steinberger had some of the lowest touch counts and the lowest passing counts of anybody on the field.
Right, and I think that's why the system argument is valid there, because obviously the system is it's not designed to have him overly involved, when then it feels like that role could be utilized differently. Move it to a third striker or something of the sort there.
I mean, at that point, might as well just play with 10 men, because it's not like the center attacking midfielder. If that's the system, then you might as well be playing with 10 men.
Yeah, I mean, also, I don't know if it's the system or the players just... Because, again, it just... They seem to left to right, left to right, left to right, and then, like, bomb down the sideline there and then cross it in. And it's just, like, it's the same play over and over. Yeah. Until Hilton made that brilliant... picked his head up, saw Deion Harris, and bombed it across the field and switched the point of attack. And then Harris took it upon himself to actually take on some defenders, like you said. And it's just like, in that one moment where the strategy changed or the players saw something, and it's like, where was this in the 56th minute when they were playing the same way? Like, Pittsburgh didn't change. They didn't just start bunkering down in the 90th minute. They've been doing that all game since, like, the 25th minute. Like, it's... but I agree where if our attacking mid is not getting touches, is not making plays, what's the point? There needs to be something there tactically to either get him involved or figure out a different role.
And here's the thing, right? We keep talking about, you know, the frustration with crossing. We always go to the end. We always cross the ball in. Did you ever consider they have to do that because there's nobody else to pass it to in the middle of the field, so all they can do is go to the end line and cross it in?
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be nice to drop the ball off to somebody in the midfield or checking in to you who's willing to turn the ball up towards the field and maybe see if they can play a through ball. Because believe it or not, if Zach's getting the ball, that means defenders are being pulled to him, which might open up a passing lane somewhere else.
Yep.
There may be a lot of defenders there, but again, if you're not operating under the impression that you're going to always have nothing but tight spaces to operate in, if you're not capable of handling that, then we need to find somebody that can. And I'm not trying to be harsh, because like I said, the problem is right now with the roster is I don't know if anybody on the bench can do any better. That's the frustration. I'm not saying that Zach is needs to be replaced. I'm saying that in the concept of what that role needs to be, and we're just not doing it, regardless of who's in the role.
Who was there last year? Was it Zach still?
It was pretty much Zach for the most part. Okay. It was Zach. Right now, technically speaking, I think you would say Matthew Serbol is probably the backup option there. And, I mean, hypothetically, you could even push Jan Ekra up into that role or even drop Seba back into that role. But I don't know, again, if I'm looking at all those options, I don't know if any of them perform over 90 minutes better than what we've seen Zach do. As much as I love Seba, I don't know if we've seen him play as an attacking mid. It's not conducive to anything amazing.
We also don't have any other strikers. So we're kind of limited up top there. We don't have somebody to play a second striker at this moment.
Yeah. This has been a little frustrating. It's frustrating.
Yeah, and it's that alarm bell. Like the strategy worked because Dos Santos is a monster up top, and he can turn in tight spaces. It allows Seba to make some runs and do things, but he's not here. And for most of the season, we're gonna have to play without him. And something needs to change tactically to get the strikers we have the ball. And I keep saying, like, Adebayo Smith is not gonna, if you launch it over top, he's got to be able to run onto it. He's not gonna be able to bring it down and turn. He's got to be able to run onto these balls. So I keep him on the ground, play some through balls. Hilton can do it. Doherty can do it. They can do it, and we're not doing it. We're still going to the same strategy with Dos Santos, and that's not working unless we find another Steven Dos Santos while he's out. And because Tejada isn't a Dos Santos, and Lucky's not a Dos Santos. Like the options we have that strategy doesn't fit.
Yeah. It's tough. We've had two losses in three games. In those games, we have not really pressured the opposing team basically at all in those two losses. And all you can do is sit back and you're like, I hope they can turn things around. You know, you're never going to go through a whole season of like 30 plus games and not get little stretches where you're starting to question yourself a little bit. Because everybody picks up injuries, everybody goes through a slump. I mean, even look at the Tampa Bay Rays are like on a 7-game losing streak right now. You could be the best team in a sport. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have like everything's going to be kumbaya the entire season. You're going to have moments where you're questioning things. And that injury to Steven Dos Santos certainly has led to all of these questions because the team hasn't looked the same. So
right, and I'm okay with questioning it. Like you said early on, like we're not, freaking out that this is panic mode, but because we still are the best team in the East here and
USL. We're still the best team in all of USL. Technically speaking, when it comes to record and points, I mean, let's not take away the fact that we're still up there. We gave ourselves that much of a cushion.
And Dos Santos or not, the team that beat Phoenix is still the team out on that pitch. Like, and Neil Collins is still the coach. Like, those things are still true. And so we're not beating anybody up saying, like, blow this up and, swap out the entire 11, do all these things. But, there are things that need to be addressed, things that need to be looked at, and things that need to be changed. And I think we'd be doing a disservice as a podcast and as fans if we weren't pushing for those things. If we were accepting, if we just walked away and we're like, yeah, that's fine, we're still the best team, then nobody wins. It's not good for anybody. So I think we need to have these conversations and not let them end. The Lightning just scored Braden Point. We just can't let that happen. We need to keep having these conversations to show that, you know, we know this team, the level this team can achieve, and we can't let them slide from that, because this is the Eastern Conference champions, and they've only improved, and we saw what they can do early in the season. So we need to just get back to that.
I think one thing that's really cool about being a Rowdies fan is that with all the legacy and all the history with behind the name, you know, behind the generations of support, and with the fact that we've had success since the rebirth in 2010, we hold ourselves to a high standard. You know, this is not just us coming on a nice little Saturday night and we're just like, oh, you know, these guys are fun and I'll watch them and whatever happens, happens. No, we expect results. We demand results. This is a fan base that puts their butt into the work needed to support this team. It's a supporters group that puts the work in supporting this team. And we don't take that responsibility lightly. And so we push the team, and we push the team to excel. And that's the expectations. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay, to a certain extent, being harsh on players, even when you're still the number one team.
Yeah, and that should be expected, and you need to be, because, again, that's as fans, and I mean, granted, we don't have a say in the locker room or anything of the sort, but like, we can't let anybody, as supporters, think we're okay with just slacking off, or the, you know, maybe one bad performance is okay. Like, obviously, we understand that everybody's human, but we need to be here, and soccer players expect the fans to hold them accountable. I think that's one of the things like that's special about the sport, is the relationship between the supporters and the players, and they expect to be held to account. And if we just sat back, then it's just, what are we doing here as supporters?
We'll end this discussion here about this past weekend's game and the warning bells that we all see. We're all scared. Let's end it on a positive note. And I think anybody and everybody walking away from that match had one obvious glaring angel from the sky that made everybody excited. And that was Deion Harris. And yes, what he did in just a few minutes on the field, coming in as a substitute in a game that we had basically done nothing to try and create some level of a spark. And I think it's fair to say in 20 minutes, granted, let's be real, it took like 21 before the impact was really seen, but you can kind of tell that he took the team on the shoulder and said, fine, I'm just going to do it myself. And in that stoppage time, he's the one that stepped up and gave us a chance to get a point. That's hugely positive. Absolutely, yeah, huge.
We need that. We need more players to, and especially late in games, to just put a team on the back and make those plays.
And go for it.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, you have nothing to lose. Like, you're already, especially when you're down 2-0. Like, I mean, I know goal differential is a thing in soccer, but like, is 3-0 or, you know, 2, is it really that big of a difference? If you're not going for it, and, what's the point? I'd rather not see my team pack it in.
Here's the thing, I think, for me. I'm okay, and I think this is something that I kind of allude to in the way that I look at this team, the way that I see them play. I want our guys to take defenders on one-on-one. You know, I want us to dribble at defenders. That comes with the fact that your winning percentage in those is going to be low. I don't care who you are. I don't really care where in the world you're playing, you're not going to dribble through more than like one defender, even if you're successful at that. You know, like, so you're probably going to have maybe a 20% win rate. I mean, even Messi, if you're watching Messi play, does not win every dribble he ever attempts. The ones that you see are the ones that he's successful at. But trust me, he's making more than just the ones you see.
There's more to soccer than YouTube highlights?
Yeah, right? I think this was the major criticism that we all had of Malik last year, is that if things didn't go his way, he was visibly shaken. Like, he was visibly upset with himself and frustrated if things didn't go his way. I'm okay with the guys even if all they do is win two or three dribbles all night. I'm okay with them making the chance as long as they don't let it get in their heads and mess with them on their effort defensively and things like that. I honestly would encourage it. I would wish it to happen, because if you can beat a defender and cause a second one to have to pinch in on you because you've beaten the first guy, that opens up lanes. Mm-hmm. That's how you create space out of nothing. And so I hope that we see that, and I do sincerely hope that we get to see more of Deion Harris moving forward. So that's, if we have to take a bright shining light, that's my shining light.
I second that. He was the spark in the bright spot of that game and the only one.
Well, like we said, Tampa Bay Rowdy still the number one team in USL with 18 points. In the Atlantic Division, even with the loss, we're down to just a 3-point advantage over Charlotte. They lost last Wednesday and didn't play over the weekend. So things are still a little tight. Pittsburgh is 4 points behind us. So there's obviously a lot of things happening here. The big, giant, massive thing is the fact that the matchup this upcoming week here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tampa Bay Rowdies are going to Hartford. Hartford has been pretty darn solid this season. Have shown that if you give them an ounce of space or lack effort in any way, shape, or form, they will punish you. They have a lot of confidence. We're going to be going on the road. If I'm not mistaken, Hartford is turf.
Yeah, I believe so.
A lot of things that stack up against the Tampa Bay Rowdies this weekend. If you're going to bounce back from a game against Pittsburgh, I would hope that we can do it here, because I think that that's going to instill a ton of confidence everywhere and make sure that the league continues to respect us.
Yeah, I was going to say, this would be a statement win, even though, like, as the best team in USL and this, that, and the other, I think bouncing back from that Pittsburgh loss and against it on the road against a hot team on turf, which is everything the Rowdy has been, like, Rowdy's kryptonite in their entire modern history. If we can bounce back and have the performance that we know we should, then it sends a message to this league that, like, okay, that, you know, they stumbled a little bit at home, bad game. This team is to be feared. We have to give them all the respect they deserve. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still very worried about this game, but I think this team has the mentality with a chip on their shoulder even more so now. And I think they might come out pretty hard.
I honestly hope so. It's going to be one heck of a match. I hope everybody gets a chance to watch it live and supports the club wherever you get to watch it, whether it's going to be at home or whether you're watching at a pub. Speaking of league, the only real league and or team news, it's been a pretty quiet couple of days, about a week here. The only significant thing is, Kelsey Steele. And we have to give this mention out because Kelsey's been a part of the USL for several years now, has been running a bit of a fun podcast with Scott Stewart, Steal Some Time, USL flagship podcast. She has been great to everybody. Anybody who's ever met her, all of the podcast co-hosts all across the country can tell you that she is absolutely fantastic to work with, to talk to. and the show that her and Scott did every week was always fun. It was always a fun and good listen. So we do thank her for everything she's doing. This week she announced that she is leaving the USL, take on an opportunity somewhere else. So we wish her all the best. She's absolutely deserves all of the thanks that you can give her. So we do wish her well on her junior. And the fact that, let's be real. I mean, she can now talk about how much she loves the Rowdies every day of the week now and not have to worry about it. I mean, that's the best part about this, is that now
she's free to, show her true fandom and not have to pretend to be unbiased.
Exactly. She can now show us who she really is, which is, of course, a Tampa Bay Rowdies fan. It's all good. We understand. Kelsey, you have a safe space at the cathedral. I'm just saying. Well, we're coming up to the end here. As far as we love yous for this week, I'm going to give a shout to Mike Pendleton and Lucky M. Kasana. They joined us this weekend for the pregame show on Twitch and to display the new t-shirt, which, by the way, we're going to be doing a drawing here in a second. If you don't hear the paperwork, we have some names that I have pulled randomly from the folks that did some nice predictions in Twitch chat. I did forget to do the one from last week or 2 weeks ago, which is the ball that is signed by Steven Dos Santos. And the name that I have pulled for the soccer ball signed by Steven Dos Santos is David from Tampa. Yes, David, you win something else because you're always constantly participating in everything we do, which is amazing, and we thank you for that so, so much. As displayed on the pregame show this past week, we have a signed Bridging Youth Soccer shirt with Lucky M. Kasana in the famous image that Mike Pendleton made. This shirt will go to, drumroll please, 1330 on Twitch is going to be the proud winner of that shirt. I will reach out to both of them. Obviously, I know David personally. I will reach out to 1330. If you're not listening to the show, I'll reach out to you through Twitch. I'll send you a whisper message. And you can pick up those. If you saw Dylan this past weekend, picked up the signed Juan Tejada shirt. So yes, you will pick yours up at the stadium and we will take
and make sure to talk some hockey smack while getting his jersey.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Dan, thank you.
Thank you. And let's go Islanders, you jerks.
And let's go Lightning because the Bolts are amazing. And there's no getting around that.
We'll get around it. Game 7. We're going to force a game 7.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me, how's that working out for you?
2 periods left. Plenty of hockey.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you to Wolfface for providing the amazing intro music, Radio St. Pete for giving us the platform to do this show on, and Shamrock Pub for the amazing hosts that they are and supporters of the show. Please, if you are listening, give us a share, give us a subscription, rate and review the show. It kind of gets us our name out there in the algorithm world. If you want to take that support a little bit further, Patreon is the best way to do it, starting as little as $1 a month. I promise you every little bit does help because it does make sure that we're not paying for everything out of pocket. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, official scarf supplier to MLS, USL and US soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or maybe even a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Dan, we have an away game this weekend. Not sure who's available or if we're even doing an away game pregame Twitch type show, but if there is, if there's a not watch party on Twitch, you might see some of us show up there on occasion or at the moments or whatever. We'll figure it out. Otherwise, we will see you guys basically later at the next game. We do want to say thank you to everybody that participates and watches the Twitch pregame show. It has been a lot of fun. Dan, I don't know about you, but I've thoroughly enjoyed doing those shows. I think they've been pretty good.
I absolutely love doing them. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, we honestly do want everybody to participate in those. We want to see a lot of chat. You know, we want to be able to interact with you guys. So please, by all means, try and log in, try and tune in. Get a chance to show that, because the interviews are fun. You get to hear a lot of cool stuff. We're giving away stuff pretty much on a weekly basis at the moment. It's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. And it's 100% free. The account, following the channel, watching the channel, chatting in the channel, it's all free. You don't have to pay anything. Though, of course, we do encourage it, because obviously Nuno and the guys with the Rowdy's Gaming do a great job with the not watch parties and the games that they do play and everything that they organize. So please, subscriptions do very much help. But yeah. Otherwise, everybody, have a good week. We'll see some of y'all this weekend. And go Rowdies.
Let's go Islanders.
Go Bolts.